Pod. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight, we've got one of our funner theme shows, because it's a theme show and a title show, where the titles of the movies could become a sentence that is the title of the podcast. It almost never happens to us.
It's our favorite thing ever.
It's pretty much our favorite thing ever, and we always wanted... It was really hard to do when we were doing three movies a week, but now we do two movies a week and a lot of random crap. You know what? It's much easier to do this, and it's happened a couple of times.
Yep.
So we're pretty happy about that. all right, but first off, a bit of random crap. I found a piece of movie trivia that I don't know if it came up when we were watching this movie, so if it did... correct me and say, I already told you that.
But, I don't sound like that.
You know what? I'm going to let the audience weigh in on this.
That's not how we talk.
Oh, you. Strong point. You're making strong points all over the place. Point is... the point is, so the movie Harbinger Down. Remember we covered that?
I can't forget it.
Yeah. So I found out why that movie exists.
Okay.
Like, why it got made. So, you remember the Thing remake? Sorry, the Thing prequel slash remake?
Yeah, I didn't see it, but I know
you remember when it happened.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what happened was, the guys who did the effects for that built practical effects for every monster in the film.
But that never got
used. They were
supposed
to be slightly sweetened. Right? But instead of being slightly sweetened, they were completely replaced with CGI and the film looked terrible.
Yes.
Yeah, we all remember what happened at the end. Well, you didn't see it, but you saw the ads, and I told you.
I know what happened.
Yeah. All right, so apparently they made Harbinger Down. They wrote and directed that team, that's SFX team, wrote and directed the movie Harbinger Down just to show off the kind of stuff they would have done had they been able to make a The Thing movie.
Well, they really did themselves a disservice, because they did a terrible job directing and editing that movie.
Yes, I know. They're not directors. And that was, you know, that was obvious from the movie.
The effects artists would know better than to shoot everything in a dark room and shake the camera while they're at it.
Yeah, I know. Especially since they were guys who were inspired by The Thing and got into business because of The Thing. So,
yeah
it's kind of frustrating. But still, I like that that's the story behind Harbinger Down, and now I'm less offended that it's such a bald-faced ripoff of The Thing. Well, of course it was. That's the point they were trying to make. You know, you got to salute them for that, if nothing else. So I just I thought that was an interesting piece of trivia that apparently didn't come up in our show about it. So there you go.
All right,
let's move on to book reports.
Yes, two book reports.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
And then, okay, so I actually read this book a little while ago and then kept forgetting to bring it up.
Nice.
But I read this book called The Last Days by a guy named Brian Evanson, whom I've never read before, never even heard about him until I read some post about, I guess, the best horror novels you're not reading or something along those lines.
I do enjoy those kinds of posts.
So this one came up on that list, so it sounded good. It was about a cult.
Ooh.
I'm like, I'm in. I'll read a book about a cult.
Especially if they get killed by some sort of karate kill.
Not that kind.
I assume this is not that kind.
Not at all. No.
Okay, sorry,
no. So... I don't know how to really describe this book or talk about it without, I don't want to reveal too much because I really enjoyed it. It got under my skin in a way that
very few of these things do.
Few books have recently.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it was exciting to read something that I was like really enjoying and really into, but at the same time, like it's a little off-putting.
It's troubling.
No, it's not troubling. It's just, again, I don't want to tell you what it's about.
Okay, you know what? Don't. Here's my question. So you want to recommend it to anyone who likes horror novels and anyone who's down for one about cults, but is there any subject matter you can say it gets into that people might be angry that it triggers them, but without spoiling? Or are you just going to have to say it's dark and leave it at that?
Well, okay. So this is, I guess this isn't spoiling too much. The first, it's based on, it was, it began its life as a novella.
Okay.
And so that's the first part of the book is the novella, which is called The Brotherhood of Mutilation.
Ooh.
So, and I'm just going to leave it there.
Okay. And then the book spins off from there.
And then, there's a bit, he added more to the story to turn it into an actual full-length novel, whatever that means.
I think it means over 160 pages or something, or like over 40,000 words. What's the line?
No,
60,000 words. It's over 60,000 words is when you start calling yourself a novel, I think.
But no, that can't be true because NaNoWriMo is 50,000.
Oh, there you go.
So
50,000.
Maybe it's 50,000. Yeah, anyway, whatever. The point is, it's a really good book. I recommend it. Brian Evanston. He got kicked out of the Mormon Church.
Nice.
For his writing.
That is quite an achievement. Yeah. Oh, wow. And you know, it's not like the 60s. It's hard to get kicked out of the Mormons now. You can't just say that black people have souls and they kick you out. They changed that. They have souls now.
Well, I'm reading the book that I'm pretty sure got him kicked out.
Nice.
So I'll let you know how that goes.
Is it Mormon horror? It's Mormon horror, isn't it?
Well, I won't talk about it until it's finished.
Okay, all right. We'll come back to circle back around to that one later. But say his name one more time in the title of the book.
Brian Evanston.
Uh-huh.
The Last Days.
The Last Days, Brian Evanston. Okay, there we go. All right, our second thing is something, we both read.
Yeah.
Weird. We talked about this 2 years ago when it was doing a Kickstarter.
I do not remember that.
It was random crap 2 years ago. Why would you remember it? Do you remember movie we talked about in upcoming horror movies?
No, but I feel like this would have been your bit of random crap. I would have known about this.
No, you didn't. It was just something you heard about. And I said we'd cover it when it came out, and now they sent us a copy, so we're covering it when it comes out.
All right.
It's called Slasher Mania. And let's see. How do I best describe... Well, why don't you just synopsize it? We know I'm bad at synopsizing.
I know, I just did a really terrible job delivering a book report.
Actually, you make a strong point there. I had not thought about that, but you did.
Basically, it's a slasher movie in comic book form.
Yes, and it is quite obviously a screenplay someone wrote that has been kind of adapted into comic book format.
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels very much like... Somebody wants this to be a movie.
Yeah, or someone has, someone wrote this, is desperately wants to make a movie. They wrote this, they realized it's never going to happen, so they did it as a comic book instead.
And I can see why, because it is bloated.
It is so bloated. Like, at the beginning, so the premise is, and this is going to be weird that I went in judging, that there is a slasher event happening. It is a slasher game show where all of the slashers get together and slash.
I don't think that's fair. This is a yearly event.
It is a yearly event. You're right.
It's like Slayer Fest.
It's exactly like Slayer Fest. Well,
yeah.
What's interesting,
slashers are brought together to participate
at a location.
A location to kill as many teens as possible.
Yeah.
Like, they compete against each other.
Basically, if you enjoy the running... What do you call that narrative that is done as an... What do you call the type of art that's done as a recurring narrative in fake news stories and blog posts over a long period of time? Because it's like the modern epistolary novel, but it's done through blog posts and fake things like that.
I guess you could still call it epistolary.
Okay, well... Narrative. If you're fond of the epistolary narrative, I think it's called Monsterama, at Something Awful that they've been doing since 2010, where it's an annual event where all of the monsters compete to see who kills the most people in the most interesting ways. This is essentially a ripoff of that, only it's just slashers, not every kind of monster.
Yeah. Yes.
And the idea is every year they get together, they kill a bunch of people... And it's not clear how much this is a comedy and how much this is supposed to be a slasher film. But you know what? We'll get there. It's structurally, it has this prop. Just this year, we are told there are 10 slashers and 50 camp counselors. And it's strange because as the thing starts, they introduce that concept right off, and I'm like, I checked the page count of it, I'm like, this is 180 pages long. I feel like they have way too many characters.
They do.
For 180 pages. Like, I feel like I'm not going to be able to keep track of anything, and 90% of what happens isn't going to matter. And that, in fact, was the result.
Yeah. But I guess...
It really gets away from them.
Yeah. But I get, like... Because this is told from the point of view of the... Not even the point of view of the slashers, but the people who are
running
watching,
the competition. Yeah.
The people who are running the competition, the people who, I guess, who are watching the competition, because it's sort of, you're, as the reader, you're actually, I guess, one of the viewers, because not, it's a live event. There's a live feed coming from the campground where this is, where it's set this year, well, 1983.
Yeah.
And so it's, you're kind of in the position of one of the people who paid a gazillion dollars to be there to watch these slashers kill these kids. Mm-hmm. And from, I guess, a storytelling point of view, in order to make sure that it is a fair competition among the 10 competitants or competitors, you have to have 50 kids. Otherwise, yeah. It's going to be a really boring show.
That's true.
Because it's spread over a couple of days.
Yeah, it's spread over 2 full days.
Yeah.
But I feel like the real issue was there are too many slashers. Like.
Yeah, so, like, but that's just what I'm saying. So if there were fewer slashers, you would have fewer
kids,
teams,
and it could be way more focused and way more, you know, coherent.
Easier to follow along. But because this year they're going bigger and better than they had in previous years, they've invited 10 slashers to compete. And so, by that virtue, the amount of victims has to rise exponentially.
Yeah, and let's just talk about, and this, I gotta say, so, creative kills, there's some fun creative kills,
mm-hmm.
just from a slasher standpoint. Obviously, it's made by a huge fan of the genre.
Yeah.
You know, that's 100% clear. At the same time, you don't really get a sense of... really what's going on with any of the slashers for the most part. You don't really get a sense of what's going on with them. Like, there's a Jason and you know that he's a Jason who wears a Michael Myers mask, and that's really all you need to know about him going in.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's, so right away you know him. There's a giallo guy who makes zero impression.
Yeah, that was disappointing.
Hugely disappointing. They go to the trouble of getting a giallo guy, they give him one kill, and then in the most ridiculous scene, he's then executed for having the lowest kill count, when there was another competitor who had zero kills.
Who had zero kills?
The one that Jason kills right away.
Yeah, but he was...
But the point
killed
is...
right away, so he can't...
But my point is, like, if the guy with the lowest number of kills gets killed, well, that's already happened, so it's not really...
Well, no, that doesn't count. He's not in the competition anymore.
He wasn't.
He can't have the lowest kill count.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, what you're saying
is... I do know what you mean. Although it is weird that the guy going in didn't know that the person with the lowest kill count gets murdered himself. But more importantly, where was he the entire time? Like, we don't, after that one kill of his, we don't see him for the rest of the comic book. He's just...
I guess he's hiding under the bed the whole time? I don't know.
Why? Like, it doesn't make sense. There's plenty of opportunities to just walk up and slash some people's throats. He just
But then you also find out that you're not allowed to attack the campers in their cabins.
Yeah, that didn't really make sense to me.
So I think, never mind the fact that there are way too many victims.
Yeah.
There are, in fact, too many killers, and I don't think the writers can keep track of them all. And that's why the giallo guy...
just disappears.
Disappears from the narrative entirely.
And then at the end, the writer was like, oh, damn it, we never did anything with that giallo guy. I guess we'll just have them execute him.
Like, yeah.
Okay. We need to establish that Blade, the villain, has a gun, I guess? Yeah, it's a weird scene. But also, the whole you can't attack camp counselors in their cabins? What?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't really make sense. But you can burn the cabin down?
Yeah.
Like, but I don't even understand that rule. Like, what is that accomplishing? Like, you, the, so theoretically, if someone hadn't thought to burn a camp cabin down, all of them could have just sat in their cabins and there could have been 20 survivors?
Only if, theoretically, yes, and only if the kids ever figured that part out.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like hiding in a cabin would be the first thing most kids would think to do.
But they don't know until it's way too late that there are a bunch of slashers running around slashing everybody.
Well, they know when there's like 20 people left. No,
only two of them know and a third guy who never goes anywhere or does anything.
Yeah, but no, but then they run around
then,
telling people.
When they run around trying to tell people, a bunch of them still get killed.
Yeah, and those people, and when they're running around telling people, they keep splitting up. They're like, let's all rendezvous back at the,
let's rendezvous 30 minutes after lights out. No, rendezvous fucking now.
I know. Instead of rendezvousing, why don't we just stay together in a big group, finding everybody? And that's because it's really hard to write what the characters do after they find out that there's a killer chasing them. Because, obviously they would stick together and try to escape. And that's why in most traditional slasher films, they find out a really, really, really long time into the story that there's a slasher after them. Usually when there's just one or two characters left. Because it's impossible to write people still getting picked off one by one after that happens. Unless you're just a bad writer, which is what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and the thing is, it's like I said, like, this is a fan of the genre. It's a person who has specific interesting kills they wanted to see, and there's some good kills in it, but there's this functional stuff where it's just, you don't believe the victim's actions once they know there's a killer running around. Like, you just don't buy that they would do these things.
Yeah, that's true.
And it can't really survive that. Also, they want to have the thing at the end where all the bad guys get killed, but they in no way earn it.
I guess that's a problem with the way this whole thing is positioned for the reader.
Yeah.
So, you're starting off behind the eight ball because all of the kids at this camp are delinquents.
Yeah.
So they're bad kids to begin with, and a lot of these killers are like sin punishment type killers.
Yeah.
So you've got a bunch of kids who are obviously going to just have sex in the woods the whole time, and a bunch of killers whose sole reason for killing is because kids are having underage sex
in the woods. Yeah,
in the woods. So it's like, what's the point?
It's a little on the nose, guys. Also, that's weird. And also weird, and I don't know what the villain, the creator was doing here. There are three female killers in this. Well, technically four, but one of them is a strange, not even gender fluid, someone who has tried to destroy their own gender.
Yeah.
Like a weird person with mental problems who has just tried to destroy their own gender. So I'm not going to say that's a female killer, even though she's biologically female. That's absolutely not what's going on with the character.
Yes.
So with that character, except for that, there are three female killers. And in a strange art choice, they're all wearing the same kind of mask.
Yeah.
They're all wearing this weird flesh-toned mask that has eye cutouts.
Yeah, and I don't really understand why all the women are wearing masks.
The same, but it's this, not just masks, the same mask.
Pretty, yeah, well, the Black Widow, hers is a frowny face.
But it's
and
still...
And the others are just blank. Like, sort of blank.
But they are all the same mask.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, and it's just weird that every one of the male characters got their own look. There's the Phantom of the Opera guy, there's the guy who's supposed to be, a mechanic-themed Leatherface type, right? There's a guy with bandages, there's a guy with an animal mask, like, there's a bunch of variety. But the female characters are all wearing the exact same mask.
Yeah.
It's very weird. And I don't know, why. Just from an art design standpoint, I don't know why that decision was made. to not give the women more outlandish appearances in line with the male characters. And maybe it's literally just because, as a super fan of the genre, the guy was having a hard time conceiving of different concepts for female characters, because there just aren't that many female slashers.
Well, I feel like at the start of the comic, like before the story begins, you're introduced, even like outside the narrative text, you're introduced to all of the killers.
Yes.
And you get a bio, and then I guess like
comments from the writer. Yeah.
Yeah, and so for the Usherette, for instance, it says that she was like kind of popped into his head fully. He knew exactly what she was going to look like and how she was going to kill and what her deal was. So I don't know if it's he had a hard time conceiving of female slasher villains.
Okay.
I don't know why he put them all in masks and why the masks are all the same, because at the end of the book, you get sketches for all the villains again, and all of the villains are shown without their masks.
Yeah. No, you're right. It's very weird.
So it's like, and like, the killers are all, you know, they're all different enough one from the next, including the women.
Yeah.
The mask thing throws me. I can't come up with a good reason why he put all of the women in masks.
Yeah. It really
or the same mask. I mean, like, yeah, mask or slasher, whatever.
But they're all in the same mask.
I know.
Very weird.
It is.
And speaking of, that's one of the things that I found the oddest, which is the book opens with what is clearly a 6 or 8 page promotional mini comic designed to explain what the premise of this whole slasher mania thing is.
Yeah.
And the problem is, it was clearly not originally intended to be part of the comic book, because everything you learn in that promotional comic, you learn again in the actual comic.
Also, did you notice that her name changes, the female host?
I did notice that.
Yeah.
Like, how did you, like, and I know, I understand, like, the promotional thing was made a long time before the rest of it, but put that as a bonus at the end of the comic book. Don't put it as a way to introduce people to the comic book. That's just a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
Especially because then, and in just the same way, the character bios. Put the character bios and the artist notes as a bonus at the end.
Yeah.
Like, hi, we're going to strip away all of the surprise and mystery for when the killers appear by literally just showing you who the killers are and what their deals are before the whole thing starts.
Yeah.
That's just a strange choice, guys. Yeah, I don't really know what you were thinking. Although at the end, I enjoyed the fake posters for all of the movies these characters were in.
Yeah, those were all fun.
That was nice.
That might have been one of my favorite parts.
It really was good.
And it just, because it reminded, I actually went to an exhibit, which was exactly that. They were fake movie posters.
Nice.
Which, and it was great. Nice. So it reminded me a lot of that.
Yeah, and what I meant by not really earning their ending is, so this whole thing happens, and then they kill for X amount of time, and then the thing ends, and then there are final girls, or final boys, or one or two. And the, and then they want her to come back and kill everybody, but we're expected to believe this organization has zero security?
Yeah, she just drives over.
She just drives over and walks in with a gun? Like,
yeah.
And if the final girl is part of the thing and they normally kidnap her at the end of the event, why is no one concerned about where their final girl is at the end?
Yeah.
You know, that's just very strange.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it at all. But, I mean, it's because they want to have the she kills everybody ending, which I understand why you want to get there. It's satisfying, but it's not earned within the narrative. Which is, you know, frustrating to watch. Okay,
yeah.
So this is flawed. I mean, I appreciate the premise.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of it, and there's some good kills, and there's some fun characters, but it is bloated. Like, had this been about one of the earlier years, I think it would have been a better story.
Just because there were fewer people.
Yeah, because there were fewer killers, there were fewer balls in the air, it would have been way easier to focus on and figure out what was going on.
My big problem with getting on board with the whole thing
is
just, why do these kids have to be bad kids?
So no one will notice, no one will care when they go, when they never turn up again.
People will still care.
I know that, and you know that, but that's the logic. That's
they're going missing.
Yeah.
On a yearly basis.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the show
would. How the fuck runaways? How the fuck are you going to track down a runaway and entice them to come to your summer camp? They're a runaway.
Yeah, I know. Like if they were, and the weird part is, if they were legit kidnapped runaways, taken from bus stations and whatnot, and forced to do this, that would actually make more sense. But then you don't have the other element, which is the kids have to not know something suspicious is going on before the killing starts.
Right.
Yeah, it's really tough. Well, no, I remember when the Jason comics that Avatar Press, not Avatar, anyway, it doesn't matter which press it is that puts them out. Jason comics tried to do a thing where they were going to trap Jason by having, a bunch of camp counselors hired to do this exact thing and lure Jason out. And the idea there was that, there's 30 people, 20 or 30 people there, and all of them notice, hey, isn't it a weird coincidence that we're all orphans? from all over the country?
Oh, my God.
It's pretty questionable. But no, I mean, it's a hard thing to write, and I don't think anybody's really cracked it yet, you know?
Again, you're just, like I said, you're behind eight ball
when you
cast your victims as unlikable people.
Yeah, like it's not going to get people on board. I mean, I wrote something basically exactly like this years ago. Like, essentially the exact same thing, but in that, again, I didn't have the victims not knowing they were victims in a twisted death spectacle, because I couldn't think of any logical way to write that. So I just didn't.
Yeah.
And because it's really hard to write. And, I applaud him for trying, but he didn't pull it off.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing is, Slashermania, I don't know how much this costs.
What do you mean?
Well, like, to actually buy this thing. It's not free. Oh. We got sent a copy. Oh, you thought I meant within the world of the thing. I do know how much that cost. It's mentioned within the thing that it costs $1 million to get a ticket. So, there you go. Although, by the way, maybe the silliest line in the entire thing is the guy saying, so you're mad at us for killing 50 people, so you're going to kill 100 people? How does that make you the good guy? Those 100 people paid $1 million to watch 50 people get murdered?
Yeah.
I think that's how? Yeah. It's a very, very silly attempt at moral high ground.
If you
there,
do the
buddy.
Math, it all adds up.
It actually does all add up. Like, I can show you the paperwork where I'm the good guy in this situation. You don't have to be Bonhoeffer to figure out the moral framework
Basic
here.
Morality.
Yeah. Oh, my God. But anyway. So, yeah, I don't know how much this comic book costs, but the thing is, like, honestly, it is flawed, but there are fun kills and fun killers, and how many terribly flawed slasher films have we enjoyed in the past?
Yeah.
Like, there's only three good Friday the 13th movies. I don't want to discourage people from checking this thing out, because it's obviously a fan letter to the genre, even if it's not as good as it could have been. It's very interesting in a lot of ways, and you can see the better version of it that could have existed because they give you glimpses of it from the past years.
Mm-hmm.
I think the writer just bit off more than he could chew, and that's too bad because it's not like it's a bad premise. It's not like it's not a resonant and interesting premise. So yeah, I mean, it could have been better, but I wouldn't say, it's not worth checking out, especially if you're a fan of slasher films, because you can see what fans of slasher films create out of that fandom.
Yes.
So,
agreed.
Not great, but, for the fans, definitely worth checking out.
Yeah.
Although I would be more comfortable doing that if I had any idea what this costs. I should have checked the email that we got emailed this thing.
Way to be prepared.
I know, it's very... Well, with movies, I can confidently say, oh, well, this movie's going to cost you $4 to rent. Like, that's just what every movie costs. With a comic book, this could be $5, this could be $30. I have no idea.
Yeah.
So, it's like, it's a little more difficult to say. But I do think it's worth checking out around the $10, $15 mark.
And not more.
No, I mean, more than that, I think you might have some buyer's remorse.
Yeah.
But around that price, I think it's definitely worth checking out.
Okay, well, there you go.
All right, so let's move on to a list.
Yes. Okay, so Because this week's theme is built partly around movie titles.
Okay.
I found a list. It's long, but we'll power through it.
All right.
50 of the worst movie titles of all time.
Oh my god, I'm so happy now. Obviously,
this is from Hollywood Reporter.
Oh, yeah. Does it count TV movies? Because if Mother May I Sleep with Danger isn't in there, I'm going to be very mad.
No, I believe these are just movies.
Damn it!
The actually released movies.
All right, fine.
Okay, so I think these are, they're not alphabetical. I don't think they're chronological. Oh, they're, okay. It might be chronological. It is enumerated. Anyway, okay. So here we go. Number one is Pfft.
Psst.
No, Pfft.
Okay.
P-H-F-F-F-T.
That's a terrible title. So, by the way, it might not be on here because they already had Pfft, but Sss, just five, seven S's, I think is what it's called, is also a terrible title along the same theme.
Well, anyway. We only have this one.
Okay, go.
For the onomatopoeia titles. Okay, right. Next. Quacker Fortune has a cousin in the Bronx. Sorry, Quaxer.
Quaxer?
Quaxer Fortune has a cousin in the Bronx.
Yeah, that's a bad title.
Terrible title.
Oh my god.
Okay, next. Blackenstein.
Nope. Nope, 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 nope.
What do you mean?
Blackenstein is an amazing title. It is not a bad title. The sequel to Black... Well, no, it's one of the sequels to Blackula. There's also Scream, Blackula, Scream. Mm-hmm. But no, Blackenstein is a great title.
All right.
Shut up.
Oh. It's going to get a lot worse.
Okay.
Okay. Zardoz.
Well, it's not a clear title.
There's nothing wrong with the title.
There's nothing really wrong with the title. It's a weird title.
Like, when you read the little blurb, it seems like... the author has more of an issue with the film itself than with the title.
Yeah, I mean, it's about a guy who, you know, it's about a group of immortals, and one of them decided to turn himself into a god the way the Wizard of Oz did, so he calls himself Zardoz, because it's a contraction of Wizard of Oz. Like, it's not a bad title.
Yeah.
It's an intriguing title. You hear the title Zardoz, and you're like, I wonder what that's about. Well, it's not a good movie.
Or you picture Sean Connery in that weird getup.
In a, yeah, in his red underwear, yeah. That is the other thing that can happen.
But there's nothing really wrong with the title.
No, there's nothing wrong with the title.
More of an issue with the film. Okay, yeah. Moving on. Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo.
No, that's a pretty terrible title. Yeah, I mean, that's not a good title at all. And I understand why it became, like, a go-to comedy reference for people. It's not a good title. I'll give him that one.
Okay, next. Greystroke, The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes.
What's wrong with that?
It's really long.
It's long, but it's not terrible.
Yeah.
Greystroke, The Legend of Tarzan, The Lord of the Apes? Like, it's just... It's kind of... It's a title that's supposed to be in the tradition of the Burroughs novels that it was based on. You know? I don't have a problem with that. But anyway, continue.
I think it's long.
I know, it is long, but I don't think it's terrible. All it's, right. Like, the worst.
Next.
Go.
Chud.
Come on!
Great title!
It's a great title! Chud!
Yeah, also, I don't think this woman has seen the movie because she says it only stands for Cannibalistic Humanoid Underground Dweller.
No, it has a second meaning.
It also stands
meaning.
For Continued Hazardous Underground Dumping.
Yes!
So.
That's what it really means.
Yeah.
Ugh. You don't know a bad title? Swim Fan. That's a bad title. Swim Fan is a bad title. Alien Cubed is a bad title. Chud is not a bad title.
That
anyway,
is
let's keep
title.
Going.
Also, that is it's a good movie. All
it's
right,
a really good movie.
Okay, here we go. Leonard Part 6.
Yeah, now that's a bad title.
Yeah, but I don't think the writer understands that it's supposed to be a
joke. Oh, no, that's true. Yeah, it is a joke, but it is a bad title. But you're right that it's kind of intentionally in that case.
Yeah. Okay, next. Drop Dead Fred.
Yeah, see, that's not a good title.
Not a good title. Weird fucking movie.
Super weird movie.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Rick Mayo. You were the best, but that wasn't a good movie.
Oh, okay, I agree with this one. Fart, the movie.
Yeah, no, that's a bad move. That's a bad title.
Terrible title.
Just like Zapped is not a good title.
Next up, I disagree with this one, V.I. Warshawski.
No, it's a great title. It's a popular series of books, and, you know.
Yeah.
It's like Magnum P.I. It's like it's a popular series of books. They wanted you to know who the movie was about. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, and again, I don't think she knows that it's from a series of books.
You're allowed to call the Jack Reacher movie Jack Reacher, and they did. Like, you're allowed to call the V.I. Warshawski movie V.I. Warshawski. Like, that's it's crazy to object to.
All right, next. Operation Dumbo Drop.
Yeah, okay, I'll give them that one. That's not a good title. Yeah.
Oh, okay, here we go. To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar.
I've always liked that title.
Like, I didn't like it. I like the movie, but I don't like the title.
I understand why you don't, but I've always been mildly charmed by that super awkward title. Although the fact that I called it a super awkward title means that, yeah, you're right.
Not good. Okay, here's another long one. The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill But Came Down a Mountain.
That's a bad title. Yeah, that is a bad title. There's way too much text in that title.
Yeah, I mean, it tells you what the movie is about.
What the movie's about, yeah. It's about the guy, and they were going to downgrade the mountain to a hill, and then they start, you know, get him to stay in town so they can increase the height of the thing, so they still have a Anyway, the point is, it's a charming little cute slice of life British pastoral comedy, but it's a terrible title.
That's funny, because here she says it's it reads more like a haiku and less like the title of a Hugh Grant World War One movie.
Okay.
I don't think she's seen it.
It's possible. That is when it's set, but, you know.
But it's not a world. Anyway, next up, Santa with Muscles.
Okay, this woman has no joy in her heart if she wants to be mad at Santa with Muscles.
Okay.
I get why it's on the list, but come on, just give him a pass.
Number 16, Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag.
No,
I agree,
absolutely.
Bad title.
100% terrible, terrible title. Awful movie, terrible title. You know, I sign off on your decision there, lady.
Number 17, Teaching Mrs. Tingle.
Yep, god-awful title.
Here's the thing, though. That movie was retitled. Originally, it was Killing Mrs. Tingle.
And then Columbine happened, yeah.
Yeah.
And had it come out with that title, that would have been fine. But it did have a terrible title. Like, I can't debate that point.
18, Existence.
Yep, 100%.
Well, she says it's a made-up word. It means existence in German.
Oh, neat. Still a bad title for a movie. Like, I've always thought that was a bad title for that movie.
Oh, I didn't think so.
I know.
But it's the name of the game. It's the name of the game.
It's just
in the movie.
And I get that, but when you see it on a poster, it just doesn't appeal, is my point. Like, as a thing to make someone interested in what the movie is, it doesn't have the hookiness of Zardoz. Like,
too
as
German,
a nonsense word. Yes, it is. It doesn't have the hookiness of Zardoz. By the way, Serenity had better be on this list, but let's keep going.
Number 19, Dude, Where's My Car?
Nope. No, I sign off on that title 100%. I really like that title. That's a movie where, yes, it does tell you exactly what the movie's about, but at the same time, it also captures the feel of the movie really well, and it makes people want to see the movie. I don't know what she's objecting to.
I think she just doesn't like the movie.
Yeah, that seems like that's a lot of her feelings about this list. Here's a movie I didn't like. This is its title. Well, that's not the same thing as a bad title.
I agree with this next one, though. Number 20, Freddy Got Fingered.
No, yeah, I was the crazy part. When you first said the list, I'm like, is Freddy Got Fingered on this list? Was the first thing I thought.
And yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Okay.
21, Riding in Cars with Boys.
Yeah, that's not a great title.
Not a very good title.
No. Fried Green Tomatoes, also a very bad title. Keep going.
Number 22, Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
I would have gone with Phantom Menace, but okay.
Yeah, Phantom Menace doesn't really deliver.
No, like Attack of the Clones, there is a clone attack in the movie.
Yeah.
Although technically, I guess there is a Phantom Menace in Phantom Menace, but it doesn't have the same impact, does it?
No. Number 23, Ballistic X versus Sever.
Yep.
I've seen this movie.
What? Oh, hey, co-starring Ray Park. But yeah, absolutely, 100%. That is a terrible title. It
Not
always
a good title.
Was.
And the copy on the back of the DVD box is even worse. Cause it,
really?
It just explains an action scene.
Oh, God.
I have a very clear memory of going to the video store
to rent Ballistic X to rent.
7. Yes. Being like, with a friend of mine. Anyway, okay. Moving on.
That you can save that for the time we go back and nostalgically watch Ballistic X versus Sever.
Number 24, From Justin to Kelly.
Yep. That's just the worst title.
That is not the worst title.
It's bad, though.
It's a shit film, but it's not the worst title.
From Justin to Kelly?
Yeah.
But what is that? What is that? That's a terrible title. In every way a title can be bad, From Justin to Kelly is a bad title.
It's a movie starring Kelly
Justin
Clarkson
and Kelly, yes.
And Justin Guarini.
So glad you remembered his name, because I did not remember
his
name.
Oh, no, it's right in front of me on the screen.
Oh, okay. I was going to humiliate myself trying to remember that guy's name. All right, next up.
Okay. 25 is Geely.
Oof. That's debatable. I don't really know how I feel about that entry.
There's a problem, though, with this list. Okay, this is a good point, because this is a halfway point. I'm going to pause here.
Okay.
And in the comments section, it's pointed out to the author and anyone who bothers to read the comments section that she is confusing Geely with Chasing Amy.
No. Both of them were about him converting a lesbian.
But she writes as a Kevin Smith movie.
Oh, okay, yes, then she is. I understand why she got confused.
So
because they are both about him converting a lesbian, but or attempting to, anyway. But yes, Geely is a very different movie than Chasing Amy.
Yeah, so that's just really embarrassing for her, proving if we weren't already sure about her...
Lack of competence?
Yeah.
Lack of competence when it comes to just the basic nature of film? Yeah, no. The second she said Chud was bad, we knew that about her, yeah. But the fact that you got Chasing Amy and Geely confused is really bad. Yeah.
All right, 26. I Heart Huckabee.
Yeah, no, that's a terrible title.
Again.
And it's I Heart Huckabees, but yes.
Oh, well... Even worse, the fact that she misspelled Huckabee.
Yeah.
She actually has the heart instead of the word heart.
It is in the title.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty
sure. Is it a heart?
It is a heart. I'm pretty sure she's right about that.
And she says here, David O. Russell might be one of the few directors brave enough to use an emoji in the title of his movie. This movie was made in 2004. I don't think emojis existed.
No, but she's calling it an emoji now. It's really just the heart symbol. Which it was a long pre-existing thing before there were emojis. Isn't she great on this list? Because it should be.
I'm not telling you what's
on this
list.
I'm making a prediction that isn't she great with an exclamation point instead of a question mark should be on this list. If it's not, this woman is even worse than I think she is.
Number 27, Dreamer, inspired by a true story.
Okay.
Yeah, bad title.
The fact that that title makes you laugh when you hear it? Yeah, no, that's a bad title. Dreamer inspired by a true story.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Balto. Anyway.
No. Number 28, Herbie Fully Loaded.
Yeah, that's a really bad title.
Why is it bad?
It's just weird.
Why is it weird? It's about Herbie, and he's fully loaded, I guess.
That's the part. The part where you say... He's fully loaded, I guess. That's what makes it a bad title.
I've never seen the movie. I wouldn't know.
I guarantee he's not fully loaded in the title. in the film. I can guarantee Herbie is not fully loaded in that film.
Okay.
I don't know what fully loaded means in this context,
but I
can confirm that he isn't.
Well, because Herbie's a car, and maybe in the context of a car, a fully loaded car would be all rotted up.
Well, he's definitely not. He's just a super... He's just a magic... VW bug. He is not a hot rotted car. So there you go. Using your own criteria, we have said that title doesn't work.
Okay. Number 29.
Yeah.
Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous.
Nope. Yeah. I really like that title.
Oh, I don't like the title.
I know you don't. And I get why it's on the list, but I'm going to say, no, I'm fine with that.
All right. Number 30, The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Yeah, that's not a great title.
Well, I think it's because the superheroes have bad names.
Yeah, that's why. That is exactly why. Like, you really put your finger on the crux 30, of the issue.
31, Garfield, a Tale, spelled T-A-I-L.
No, screw you. A Tale of Two Kitties is a great title. It's The Prince and the Pauper, but with Garfield, and so it's Garfield and a British cat voiced by Tim Curry, and it's great, and that's a great pun title. Shut up, list.
Number 32, Lucky Number 11. I got no problem with this title.
That is the worst title.
Well, I don't think, no, there are way, this
title. No, it's a terrible title.
No, it's not that bad. There are way worse titles out
you
there.
You think Lucky Number 11 isn't one of the worst titles?
I do think that, yes.
You're a mad woman, but what is your problem with the title?
I don't have a problem with the title.
You don't have a problem with it. You're crazy. But anyway, especially when we find out that the reason it's called Lucky Number 11 is because the main character's name is Slevin,
yeah.
Which isn't a name.
Oh my God. Number anyway. 33. Who is your caddy?
Oh, I've never heard of that movie.
Yeah, I don't think
already, but I already hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I've never heard of it before this second, and now I hate it more than I've ever hated any movie.
All right, let's move on then. Ugh. To 34, You Don't Mess with the Zohan.
No, that is a terrible title.
Yeah. I don't have an opinion one way or the other.
I don't think that's a good title.
35, Surfer Dude. There's a comma.
No, I've seen Surfer Dude. I own a copy of Surfer Dude.
Why?
Because it is a movie that forgets to be a movie. Like, it was an excuse for Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson and, yes, Willie Nelson to hang out on a beach for 2 months smoking pot. Mm-hmm. And they forgot to make a movie while they were doing it. And so they just cut together the random stuff they shot and pretended it was a movie.
Wait, Woody Allen or Woody Harrelson?
Woody Harrelson.
Did you say Woody Allen or did I...
I said Woody Harrelson. You heard Woody Allen.
Okay. I'm like, that guy doesn't smoke pot.
No.
He's way too manic.
Woody Harrelson was on Colbert last week. And they're like, and Colbert's like, so I understand you stopped smoking pot. And he's like, yep, I've stopped smoking pot. And Stephen Colbert's like, he doesn't say it, but he's like, you're obviously high right now.
And it might not be pot.
Well, no, what he says is, he's like, what he says is, I thought you said you smoked smoking pot, and his response is, I don't know, do you smoke brownies?
Technically, vaping isn't smoking.
But yeah, he's, in every way the best is the point.
Oh my God. Okay, so number 36,
yeah.
Quantum of Solace.
Yeah, worst title.
Yeah, it's not a good title.
Worst James Bond title.
Also maybe worst James Bond movie.
Well, no, as I said when I walked out of Quantum of Solace, at least I will never see a worse James Bond movie than this. And then I saw two worse James Bond movies than that. Skyfall and Spectre are both worse than Quantum of Solace.
It's a perfectly good action movie. It's a shitty James Bond movie.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
All right, number 37. This is hard for me to say.
Okay.
The Hottie and the Naughty.
No, totally. Yes, that is one of the worst titles.
Yeah. Moving on. The Love Guru.
Yeah, that's a pretty... I don't...
There's, no, there's nothing wrong with this title.
No, but it's like, it's not... It doesn't jump out at you either.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with it.
You're right. There's nothing wrong with the title Love Guru. You're right.
Not like Fart, the movie.
Not like Fart or The Hottie and the Naughty.
Yeah. Number 39, Cirque du Freak, the Vampire's Assistant.
You know, I think it's the subtitle they're saying that hurts it there. I think Cirque du Freak would have been an acceptable title, and I think The Vampire's Assistant would have been an acceptable title.
Well, here's
but slap them together probably just awkwards it up too much.
Here's the blurb.
Please.
The film title reads like a long-forgotten Cirque du Soleil show that was trying to capitalize on the Twilight craze but received a very short run. This is named title after the book that it's adapted from, and I don't think she knows that. Also, I think the book is just called Cirque du Freak.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, no, it's a series.
Oh, okay, so it's like the Vampire's Cirque du Freak series, and the first book was called The Vampire's Assistant, or vice versa.
I don't actually remember, but I know that it's based on at least one book.
And I believe John C. Reilly was the vampire in question.
Correct.
Which makes me unbelievably happy.
All right.
I just like the idea of John C. Reilly playing a vampire. I didn't see the movie, but I like the idea of the movie.
Well, I think it's still on Netflix. So
oh, okay. Well, you know what? Then I'm watching that. Okay.
Number 40, The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Shut up. That is a great title.
I like
that title so much. Like, what? That's the kind of title where you're like, I wonder what this is about.
I don't know.
And the answer is, it's about, you know, John Ronson's amazing adventures with crazy special forces people. And remote viewing.
I don't think it's a great title.
Okay. I think it is a great title.
I think it's because you like the movie.
You're probably right.
But then again, I
will admit to that because, you know what? She's saying she doesn't like most of these titles because she doesn't like the movie. So.
Or doesn't know the movie.
Or doesn't know that it is a movie.
All right, here we go. 41, Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole.
Yeah, no, that's a bad title.
This is also, I believe, from a book.
Oh, definitely. It's definitely, like, I don't think Zack Snyder came up with that on his own.
I also think there's a reason why this movie has this title, and we're going to come back to it in a minute.
Oh, okay.
All right. 42, We Bought a Zoo.
I don't know if We Bought a Zoo is a great title.
I don't know if it's
one of the worst titles.
It's one of the worst titles, and it tells you exactly what the movie's about.
That's true.
But it's not like heads in a duffel bag.
Yeah, that's true.
Which does the same thing, but in a much worse way.
You know what? You're making a strong point there. I kind of wish Joyride had had its original title that J.J. Abrams wrote it with, because then it could have been on this list. Squelch.
That's so stupid.
Apparently that's one of the things on a CB radio, is the squelch.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means, but apparently he was very... maybe.
No, it is. I know for a fact.
Okay. All right. He was just... When he was finding out about CB culture, he became very enamored of the word squelch.
That's just the noise that it makes.
Oh, okay. Well, oh, the... When it's connecting, I didn't know that was called the squelch.
Oh, now you do.
I do. I'm not as enamored of it as he is, but he became very enamored of that word.
It can also be used for, like, a squishing noise.
I didn't know that. Oh, no, well, I did know that. I didn't know about the CB radio connotation, is the word I was looking for there. Continue.
Number 43, No.
The movie's called No?
The movie is called No.
And is that, like, N-O or the Japanese No? Like, No Theater.
It's about an executive who comes up with an ad campaign to defeat Pinochet.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's the Japanese word. No.
Probably not. No, it's probably not about Japanese theater then.
Number 44, Rise of the Guardians.
Oh.
So this movie, Rise of the Guardians and Legend of the Guardians, came out close to one another.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
And I believe that's why Legends of the Guardians has the subtitle.
Because they didn't want people to be confused.
Confused
with Rise of the Guardians. Oh, that's so sad.
Movies with the word Guardians in the title.
It's like when they made those two Steve Prefontaine movies right next to each other.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, there was a runner called Steve Prefontaine who was a very fast Olympic runner. And then he died in, like, a car accident when he was still super young and everyone was sad about it. And so two different movie companies the same year both said, we've got to make a bio of Steve Prefontaine! The same year.
Okay.
And so one was called Prefontaine and one was called, I believe, Without Limits, The Steve Prefontaine Story.
Okay.
And it led to a lot of brand confusion, as you can imagine.
Anyway, I think a similar thing was going on here. Also,
probably.
Rise of the Guardians, I think, is also a series of books.
Oh, okay.
I think, I don't know for sure.
For some reason, I thought Rise of the Guardians was that one that had the weird, what do you call it? The kangaroo people? But I could be thinking of something else.
No.
There was that weird, you know, kids action movie with kangaroo people in it. It means nothing to you, does it? Like,
no,
it sounds like I'm just talking
Guardians.
Crazy.
Rise of Guardians is about these characters who sort of, they're kind of like holiday characters, like the Easter Bunny and the Sandman and Santa.
Oh, that one. Okay, I was. I don't know what I was confusing it with.
No idea what you're talking.
I do remember the one you're talking about. I have no idea what movie I was thinking of then. It's a different movie, of the title of which I have no idea. If someone can tell me out, I will help me out. I'll appreciate that. All right, keep going.
Number 45, John Carter. Nothing wrong with that title.
Nothing wrong with this. I mean, do I wish it had been called John Carter, Warlord of Mars? Yes. But John Carter is a perfectly good title.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that title. I also nothing wrong with that movie.
No, it's a really fun movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, we enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, here we go, 46.
Go.
It Follows.
I've never liked the title It Follows, so really? I'm going to sign off on that one, yeah.
Oh, I think it's fine.
I know. A lot of people did. I didn't like the title.
She also, it's very clear that she hasn't actually seen this movie. So.
Like, as often happens on this list.
Fair. oh, boy. Number 47.
Go.
Edge of Tomorrow.
Screw you.
Oh, that's a great title.
It's a great title.
Title of the book.
Title of the book is garbage. It's the worst title I've ever seen.
Yeah.
All You Need Is Kill? What the hell is wrong with you?
Well, it might be something a little different in Japan, which
maybe
reads differently.
Yeah, but that's not the title that people are pretending they would have preferred. People go out and pretend they would have preferred if it had been called All You Need Is Kill. And I'm like, if a movie had come out calling All You Need Is Kill, you would have been, that's the dumbest title I've ever heard in my life, and you would have made amazing fun of it. But because it was a Tom Cruise movie, yeah, and they made it from like a 20-year-old character to a Tom Cruise age character, you decided to pretend you liked the original thing. Well, you didn't. I'm really mad about this, apparently.
I guess so. All right, 48. Focus.
Go. Focus?
I don't know what's wrong with the title.
Is that the movie with Will Smith?
Yeah, the one where all the posters look like ads for glasses.
Oh, yeah, they really did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
I didn't think about that, but you're totally right. Yeah, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that title.
Well, I think she put it here just so she could write this joke. Many moviegoers complained that the title and print campaign for this movie was too vague.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. But
yeah,
that's
but she's being clever, trying to make a funny joke.
Oh, okay.
Get it? Focus. It's too vague.
Oh, no, I get it. It's very funny.
Number 49. Badass 3, Badasses on the Bayou.
I'm fine with that. I haven't seen Badass. I haven't seen Badass 2.
It might be a dumb movie, but...
Probably a dumb movie, but...
I mean, it's...
It's the movie with Danny Trejo and a bunch of old people kicking ass.
Yeah, I don't really know why.
Like, I don't know why you would object to that. Yeah, it's fine.
All right, last one. Can you guess what it is?
Well, it should be, Isn't She Great? But it isn't, somehow. I guess she's just not aware of that movie.
Okay.
That was my guess.
Oh, that was your guess. Okay.
Yes.
Aloha.
Oh. No, that's there's nothing wrong with the title Aloha.
No.
It's not a good movie, but there's nothing wrong with the title Aloha. This is a strange list.
Yeah. Apparently, this movie had two other titles.
Oh, what were they?
Deep Tiki and Volcano Romance.
Yeah, Aloha was the right choice.
Yes!
100%. Aloha was score. Score on that choice.
So this was a terrible list written by a woman who hasn't seen half the movies and doesn't like the others.
Seriously, though, like, if you want questionable movie titles at that time, Silver Linings Playbook. That's a questionable movie title. Nothing wrong with Aloha.
Yeah, someone in the comments suggested Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, I see that.
What else do they have here? Just a lot of shit talking about confusing Geely with Jersey Girl.
As you should.
Yeah.
No, not Jersey Girl, Chasing Amy. You said they're confusing with Jersey Girl because it starred the two of them.
I said Chasing Amy. I think they mean Jersey Girl.
Because, yeah, it's the one that Jennifer Lopez was in with him briefly at the beginning of the movie.
Yes. So, that's my mistake. But the point is, the bigger mistake was made by the women writing the article.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Geely is not Chasing Amy. He's not Jersey Girl, sorry.
Existenz means existence in German. Yeah. You couldn't even get the name right on I Heart Huckabees. Right, and that's it for the comments. Yeah, not a good list. I think we can think of 50 worse titles than this list of 50 worse titles.
Well, there's a movie called Isn't She Great? And I know I'm harping on this, exclamation point instead of a question mark, but it's a question.
Isn't she great? No, it doesn't be a declared statement.
I really don't think it is, though.
Run, bitch, run.
Run, bitch, run. That's a perfectly example. Bunny Man. Like, we could do 50 worth titles just based on movies we've actually covered here on the show.
Yeah.
Serenity. Terrible title. All right, so let's move on.
Oh, my God.
I think they're still making horror movies?
They are, believe it or not. Even after all this discussion, terrible movie titles. They're still making horror movies with terrible titles. Also movies with the same titles, because you can't copyright a title.
Damn straight.
So this week I have for you Escape Room. Not to be confused with the Escape Room I talked about a little while ago.
Wow. All right, what's this one about?
I am a little confused as to which one I covered. Okay. So I'm hoping this is the newer one. To celebrate his 30th birthday, Tyler's girlfriend, Kristen, takes him and two other couples to play the latest craze, Escape Room.
Okay.
There is a description of what that is. I'm going to skip over it.
Yeah, everyone knows.
The group is led into a locked room, and the clock starts ticking. They quickly sense something is wrong. The puzzles become increasingly difficult and increasingly deadly. Because some are only a little deadly.
Well, no, they start out a little deadly, and then they grow more and more deadly.
One by one, the escape room claims a new victim, and the surviving players realize they are no longer playing a game, they are playing for their lives.
By the way, the way you said that, it makes it sound like it takes them a couple of deaths to realize.
Wait a minute, this room's trying to kill us.
After four of them get killed, wait a minute, maybe this isn't a game. There were six of us earlier.
Maybe the first was an accident.
Oh, God. It's weird how maybe the thing that the Saw franchise, like the biggest effect it's going to have on culture is the creation of escape rooms. Because I think we can...
Escape rooms, I think, were a thing before
But they weren't a cultural phenomenon until after Saw brought the idea of being locked in a room and having to use a bunch of puzzles to escape, like, to the cultural zeitgeist.
Well, escape rooms didn't start in North America, you know that, right?
I do know that. They started in Japan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just saying, they hit in North America because of Saw. I'm not saying they're ripping off of Saw. I'm saying Saw made them a hit.
I don't know if that... I never made the connection between Saw and escape rooms. I was told that's about weird. An escape room. I'm like, that sounds like a lot of fun. Who doesn't like solving puzzles?
Everybody likes solving puzzles.
I never... Like, there's no reason for me to make the connection.
But now that you have, you see why I did and so many other people have, too.
But I wouldn't say Saw was about solving puzzles. It's about cutting off your arm. Or it's killing the other guy.
Like, it's about going through an ordeal to escape.
Solve there.
or if you believe the ridiculous rule that the Jigsaw Killer put out in the end of the first movie, just picking up a key before it goes down a drain.
But you're not set up for success with that one either, because as soon as you wake up and pull your head out of the water, the key goes down the drain. So it's like you can't win.
Oh, yeah, but you can't win any of the games. That was the whole point. Jigsaw was an asshole. We did an entire 6-hour podcast about that.
Oh, and we'll be adding another hour to that one because there is another Saw movie.
How? How is there another Saw movie?
Saw Legacy, duh.
As long as Carrie Elwes is Jigsaw this time, I guess I'm fine with that.
This isn't news.
I know it's not news. I'm just, you know, frustrated. All right, so let's move on to things we actually watched this week after an hour.
Okay.
You're welcome for the bonus length episode, people.
Seriously. Oh, we could just burn through these two movies.
We really will.
So our first movie tonight in our theme double feature, Let's Be Evil. Desperate for money, Jenny takes a job watching over a group of kids who are part of some kind of advanced learning experiment that involves using reality augmenting glasses. And because the movie has the worst title ever, you know exactly how this is going to turn out.
Do you ever? Okay.
This movie made no sense.
Well, no, it doesn't.
I got to the end. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I mean, we're just going to spoil this right now. Are you ready? Yeah, there's only one kid.
Yeah.
There's only one kid. And nothing happened. Nothing actually happened. There was just one kid and the girl who she torments over and over again on an endless loop.
And I don't know why or how.
Yeah.
What's the point?
There's no point. Actually, the weird part is, I will give the ending this. That something the girl does, the main character does, really frustrated me. So she, like, there's this part where she goes to the bathroom and finds a creepy message on etched into the wall. And then she goes to get other people and show it to them, but it's gone. And she's like, I don't understand what could have happened. I'm like, you're wearing augmented reality goggles.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
And the thing is, ever there to begin
it
with.
It wasn't there to begin with. How do you not understand this?
Yeah.
You were told what the augmented reality goggles were when you put them on, and you know exactly how they work. How is this confusing to you? But then, to the film's credit, at the end of the movie, we find out, in all likelihood, she's actually wearing the augmented reality contact lenses, and the headset she had on never mattered. So it wouldn't have, because, like, the whole movie I'm yelling at her, take off the goggles! They can't play with you if you're not wearing the goggles. Then at the end of the movie, it turns out she's been wearing the contact lenses this whole time and nothing mattered.
Well, the kid was wearing the contact
lenses. No, but you have to assume she was too, because she was already in this before the first time she put on
you can't the goggles. Assume anything, because nothing in this movie makes sense. Why is this movie told from three different people's point of views? Why do we get to experience a film through two other people who are also in this facility?
Who, it turns out, aren't real.
Aren't real? What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. It's a lie to make you... I mean, the reason we see it from their perspective is so that we'll think they're real and be surprised when it turns out nothing actually happened.
Yeah.
And that's completely unfair.
Yeah. Also, like, Jenny's father was killed at the beginning, like, when she was a kid.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, this might have, like, I'm interested to see how this works its way into the story. No.
It doesn't. No. It
doesn't matter.
Doesn't. At all.
Has no bearing.
On anything that happens for the rest of the movie.
Whatsoever. Yeah.
You'd think it would. It doesn't.
It does not.
No, she just makes her easier to manipulate by the evil girl who's doing all of this.
And well, who is this little girl? Why does she have a magical contact lens? And why is she preying on Jenny? Like,
yeah,
what the shit's going on?
No, there's no explanation. Well, I guess maybe she is part of a government experiment to create a super child who's a psychopath. And I don't know why the government wants to do that, but it's possible that that part of it is true, and part of her training to be a psychopath is to just mess with this girl.
But again, there's nothing in the movie to suggest that that's
actually going on. No, I'm doing all the heavy lifting here. I'm not saying the movie is saying that. I'm saying that I am extrapolating based on the bare minimum of content we get from this film.
Right.
Like, I am meeting the film more than halfway with that explanation. But I think that's what's going on. I mean, who knows how long this has been going on. But I mean, but the end of the movie does make it relatively clear that the first time she took this job was all part of the game, which means the headset doesn't matter, which is why I assume she was wearing the contact lenses the whole time. And because none of this has been real, even before she put the headset on, weird stuff happens. But we're, I guess, supposed to believe none of that was real either.
Nothing is real.
Yeah, nothing is real except for there's an evil little girl tormenting her.
Yes.
Yeah. And an AI that works for the little girl. I do like the...
Maybe, I guess.
Maybe. Maybe the AI doesn't work for the little girl, but the AI is just enabling the little girl because it's part of her training to be evil?
I don't know, because, like, the way it's, the film is set up, you're perfectly right to believe that everything you're watching is actually happening.
Yes,
because the film begins with this idea that, I don't know, America is losing some kind of culture war.
Yeah.
Or no, the only way to save America is to educate future generations and make them as smart as possible so that they'll take over. And it's like, wow, you really misunderstand your political system and how it works.
I know.
Because the smartest people aren't the ones running the country.
No.
And so all of these kids are part of this program to turn little kids into super geniuses.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, somebody got this program up and running, and one of these little kids turned evil because of it. Okay,
yes.
That's fine. I guess I can get on board with something like that. But then when you find out that it's just the one little girl, it all falls apart at that point.
Well, yeah, because you're like, so why are they...
So who is this little girl? Why does she, like, what's the deal? Like, what is she
with
part
the
of this
program?
Or is it something, like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, like, it's a twist at the end of the movie that invalidates the whole movie. Like, what was I watching and why was I watching it?
Yeah.
Well, because of the title. That's why I was watching it. But what did I just watch? The film really has no interest in telling you.
And there's nothing wrong with the actual story of this special education program, and you've got an evil
kid. Turn kids into psychopaths.
Or turns the one kid into a psychopath.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot you can do with that idea.
Yeah. But then to turn out it was all of a lie, you just invalidate everything we've been watching for the last 80 minutes. To what end? Like, what does that twist get you?
Nothing.
It gets you nothing. Like, it doesn't improve anything. It doesn't teach us anything. Well,
no, and in fact, it makes the film a lot worse.
Yeah. So, yeah, Let's Be Evil. Not a great film to start with, but it really botches it at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I don't know why they're so afraid. These are children. Just punch them. The children obviously don't have weapons. Of any kind.
Yeah.
Like, the one guy that they kill...
suffocate him.
They kill by, like, 8 kids climbing on top of him to hold him down and putting a bag over his head. And I'm like, and she cowers in a vent while that's happening. And I'm like, you know, if you just went out of that vent...
Yeah.
4-on-1, like, you could probably take those kids.
Yeah, I can.
The whole time they're acting terrified. I'm like... Why? They're just children.
Just children. But I guess you can't beat up kids. So.
Of course you can. It's easier than beating up adults.
You know, I don't mean physically. You can physically beat up a kid.
Yeah.
I'm talking about morally.
Well, once the kid is a super genius trying to kill you, I think it's lost its right to the assumption of innocence that makes us not want to beat up kids. We only don't beat up kids because there's an assumed youthful innocence to them. Once they start, you know, like, having an eat, burning somebody alive.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's beat up those kids. It would be weird not to.
All right, Let's Be Evil. It sucks.
All right. Yeah, it's not good. Let's move on to...
Morgan. When a company's human killbot experiment goes wonky, an assessor is sent to take stock of the project.
So
I had problems with this movie.
You had problems?
Yeah.
I had problems too. can I put the spoiler warning here?
Yes.
Right up front. All right. So spoilers after here. If for some reason you want to watch Morgan, you probably shouldn't. You can just fast forward to the end of the show now, and come back when we're done. Come back when you're done watching the movie.
Yeah.
You can hear us excoriating the film Morgan. So at what point did you figure out that she was also a killbot? When she was on screen for 3 seconds? 4 seconds?
I'll admit, I didn't figure it out until much later in the movie.
Okay.
I didn't know right away that she was another. She was also a killbot.
I knew right away.
I have a problem with the fact that she is a killbot.
Please.
Because sending her in
to assess the situation.
Yeah.
It's a terrible idea. Yep.
And it does not. If they sent her in, they've already written off this project. Yeah. Why bother sending in a killbot for an assessment?
No. The killbot is the worst person to send in for an assessment.
Well, it already states that you've made up your mind that this experiment will be terminated.
Oh, yeah.
And so
why are you bothering bringing in Paul Giamatti?
I know. Who gives a shit? Worst psychologist ever.
I know.
Oh, my God.
And more to the point, did he not... First off, he's terrible at his job. But B, did he not know he was assessing a killbot?
Maybe not.
But I feel like that's central to, like, the fact that she's a killbot who is designed only for killing. She was a humanoid organism designed... She was a Hodok. A humanoid organism designed only for killing.
I stand by killbot.
Yeah, I know. I'm just.
Killbots.
I wanted to do the Marvel reference, and I think it's a strong reference. People love MODOK.
Futurama killbot references.
Futurama is a good reference too.
Farnsworth's killbots.
I do love Farnsworth's killbots.
I don't remember Wordstrom's.
Oh God, yeah. What were Wordstrom's called?
Oh man. Anyway, the point is.
You kind of like okay. They built a killbot, but they built a killbot who, what's the lead actress's name?
Kate Mara.
Kate Mara. They built a killbot, Kate Mara.
Wait, but... I don't know which one's Kate Mara. Is Kate Mara the killbot?
She's the killbot.
Okay.
No, she's the main character.
Okay.
Right. She's not Morgan. She's whatever the main character was called.
Lee.
She's Lee. Right? Right? They made a killbot, right? But the problem was, the killbot is... inhumanly cold and can't communicate with people at all. Like, can't empathize, has no emotions. She's just a killbot.
Well, no, she shows a bit of emotion when she's drinking on the porch with the cook.
Yes, a bit. But the thing is, she fundamentally doesn't get people. She's not good with people. She's just a killbot. So what they wanted to do was build a killbot that still had all of its killbot programming, but they'll raise it as a real person... to trying to get it to be have a full suite of emotions and be able to interact with people, but also be able to turn being a killbot on and off. That's the point of the Morgan program.
It's never going to work.
It's never going to work, right? Obviously. But B...
Because either you have created a psychopath...
Yeah, who's totally fine with killing, like Kate Mara.
Or you have a killbot that can't kill.
Yeah, exactly.
That has a moral compass.
Like, what? First off, why did you think this was a good idea? You have a perfectly serviceable killbot in Kate Mara.
Yeah.
Why are you trying to build a more flawed killbot? To what advantage?
Well, here's the thing that I got a little confused with, because at one point in the movie, they're talking about Morgan and how she's supposed to be a better version of us. And then they talk about how she's supposed to be peaceful and loving. It's like, okay, well, if she's supposed to be a peaceful, loving, better version of a human being, then why is she programmed to kill?
Why was she built as part of the killbot program?
I don't understand what you're trying to accomplish here.
No, but it's like it raises the question. Do people, like, do all of the people in the program even know that she's a killbot?
Maybe not.
Or were the people, they're not told she was a killbot?
Well, no, because somebody makes reference to her programming.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, the woman in charge knows. But I'm saying,
what happened in Helsinki.
Yeah, because in Helsinki, they had another killbot go nuts and kill everybody.
Yeah.
She knows, because she's the one who built the killbot program. But my question is... do all of the people raising her know she's a killbot?
I don't think so.
Okay. And again, in the weird part, I would understand keeping that information from them, because if they knew she was a killbot, they might not treat her like a person and they're trying to socialize her.
But
right?
The company- company specifically doesn't want her to be a person.
I know!
And they have a huge problem with people referring to Morgan as her and she.
Yes! That's what's so confusing about this, the whole story of this movie. All of the people around her want to treat her like a person and are treating her to socialize and trying to raise a more peaceful person, but the company's paying them to build a killbot, and it's not clear how many of them know that.
So I think what, like, I guess the problem there, because, like, there's a way around this.
Yes.
A really easy fix for this problem.
Yeah.
In that the company is concerned that their Morgan killbot program has gone off the rails a little bit.
Gone native, if you will.
Yeah, sure. And so they send in their other, much more successful killbot to assess the situation.
Yeah.
And while she's there, then shit hits the fan, Morgan goes crazy and kills everybody because of the presence of this other killbot.
Yeah.
But
if
because the film is set up that Morgan went
is already
had an episode
doing,
and
yeah.
hurt somebody, which forced the company to bring someone in to take a look at what's going on there, you've created a conflict you can't resolve.
That's true. And in your version of the movie, where she's sent in just to assess because they don't think the killbot's going well, you can actually make Kate Mara, maybe to a certain extent, she, as a killbot who doesn't want to be replaced, is trying to sabotage the situation.
There, yeah. Perfectly.
And that would be an interesting extra level to the character.
Yeah. Or not even there to sabotage the situation, but maybe people start to understand what it is that they're working with here.
Right. Yeah,
if
that could
not
work too.
All, if they haven't been read into the killbot program.
I know.
And Morgan starts to understand who she is or who she's supposed to be, as
yeah.
opposed to developing who she is in this environment with these nice, caring people who are all her friends.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot you can do with that, but because they already have Morgan being glitchy.
And just wanting to kill.
And wanting to kill because that's her programming. Well, again, you're not setting yourself up for
success.
It sabotages
the whole movie.
It does. You sabotage your own narrative. You've undermined yourself. And when you bring in a character like Paul Giamatti, you're not setting yourselves up for success.
Well, no, and the crazy thing with the Paul Giamatti scene is, again, if he doesn't know that she's a killbot, I don't know what the purpose of this scene is. Because, like, there's no reason for him to do an assessment of her stability. Because the whole point is, she's a killbot, but she has to function in society.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to find out if she's stable enough to be
but
let out.
He does. He just antagonizes her, provoking a violent response so that they can shut down the program.
Yeah.
The only reason he's there is to precipitate the next part of the movie happening.
But if that's the case, and the thing is, it seems like that's his actual intent.
Yeah.
But he already knows she cut somebody's eye out. So why on earth is he going into a room with her?
Maybe he doesn't know that. Because he never brings it up. Oh, no, he does.
He does.
He does come up, yeah.
He does, right. Yes. And I'm like, I don't understand. And then you have this ridiculous moment where the movie basically ends. Because they're like, because she cut somebody's eye out, we really feel like you should talk to her from the other side of a wall. And he's like, if you don't think I'm safe in a room with her, we don't have to do the assessment. She's failed.
Fair
and
enough.
Like
that logic.
Fair enough. And you know what? That's completely true. She has failed. You don't have to do the assessment. The weird part is, his character makes no sense in that point because he's right. The moment he walks into that lab and finds the chair on the other side of the glass,
he should have been.
She has failed.
Yeah.
She has failed the assessment. Why does he continue and do the assessment trying to get himself killed?
I don't know. Never mind the fact that he arrived there late and he wants to get out of there as fast as he can.
I know. He's just not good at his job at all.
But the bigger problem in all of this,
yeah,
is this episode that took place before the movie begins, and we see it in flashback, this incident with the deer in the woods, which
yeah.
prompted her to get locked up in her room. She doesn't have any more outside privileges, which then, I guess, prompted her to attack one of her minders.
Which led to the assassination.
Which led to, okay, blah, blah. Anyway. So, nobody at any point in this movie asks her about the deer.
Yeah.
And that's the heart of all of this. Yeah. Why did she kill the deer?
Yeah.
And everybody, like, people are freaked out and upset by it.
But no one actually goes into what her motive is.
To what her motive, and to me, her motive was mercy.
Oh, it obviously is.
And like,
and that's the mess. It could be the sub message of the film that she like used her powers to do that. But the fact is, and then they're trying to say, well, killing something awoke and killing in her. No, she was just trying to be nice. And yeah. Then you locked her away. You
she
guys created
empathy.
This problem.
You create a killbot with empathy.
Yeah. Which is a bad thing to do.
But nobody ever talks to her about the deer, asks her about why she killed the deer. I'm like, this is the heart of the issue right here. It's not any, like, everything that comes afterwards, it all stems from this one episode in the woods with the deer.
Yeah.
And nobody's addressing it.
And no one gives it the focus it deserves.
Yeah.
No one seems to understand how pivotal it is. And weirdly, pivotal, ugh. Apparently I can't say the word pivotal now. No, and all of the characters who are supposed to be experts on this should understand the significance of this act, but none of them do.
Yeah.
It's such a frustrating part of the movie.
They suck at their jobs.
Yeah, it is a movie where basically everyone's bad at their job.
Yeah, and then when they're given the order to kill her, they refuse to do so.
Yeah.
And then she just goes nuts and kills everybody. It's like, no, I was ready to like you and sympathize with you and be scared for you.
She's just a killbot.
Oh, you're just a killbot. And
you're killing all these people for no discernible reason.
Yeah.
All the people who are standing up for you and who are trying to help you and are trying to defeat Kate Mara to help you, you just start killing all of them.
Yeah.
Because the Chinese lady said you don't have a mother? Okay.
Yes.
You do. She is your mother. She was obviously only saying that to protect herself emotionally.
Yeah.
You know? But I guess you're not that great with people. Which is also true.
So, yeah, the movie has more than a few problems.
It's nothing but problems. And it's the thing you always say, that there's a more interesting movie hiding underneath the surface of...
Yes.
Of this movie.
Yeah.
Right? There's a more interesting movie hiding under the surface of Morgan, and you just wish they'd made that instead.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, Morgan, frustrating. Frustrating and not good, and I kind of feel sorry for the guy who wrote it. When Ex Machina came out while this was in production.
Yeah.
Because that's a much better movie about roughly the same thing.
Well, even, like, don't get me wrong, I love Ex Machina. I think it's a great movie. But I always want to recommend The Machine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Over Ex Machina.
No, I think that's right.
Love that movie.
That is the best movie about the same topic.
Yes. And no one's seen it. It's so tragically...
Underwatched, I think, is underviewed.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Might be the way to say that. But no, and it's frustrating here because you're right. By sending a killbot, they're sending a message, and had the film embraced that, that would have been much more interesting.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Again, but you're right. Fundamentally, why are you trying to give a killbot emotions? What is the best case scenario in giving a killbot emotions?
People want to bond, but they're a killbot? I don't know.
Oh, it's ridiculous. All right, so that was Morgan. You don't have to watch it. If you stayed to the end and haven't seen it yet, don't. Do you have any narcissism to watch?
No. And you know the reason why.
I do know the reason why.
So no, I don't. Not this week.
All right, okay, over at my front, obviously constant new content at Hidden Object Guru on YouTube. New stuff coming.
We played some stuff together. So
we did. I'm putting those up this week.
My narcissism as well as yours.
You're right. I'm putting up some more DM plays this week. We found a guy who makes 80s slasher tribute games. Buggy 80s slasher tribute games. But we played through two of them, and we had a pretty good time. So I'm putting up those videos this weekend, so you can check those out. And also we played, already up, is us playing the movie-themed missions of the game Serial Cleaner, which I liked a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, check those out too. Also, new stuff coming to Vargelon.com very soon. I'll tell you, just be on the lookout there. It's going to be exciting for everybody. And that's all I'm going to say about that. What else? No, I think that's it for narcissism right now, although I'm working away at, the script for, Don't Run Away. So expect more news about Don't Run Away coming soon. Once I can afford to hire an artist, basically, is when you should expect that news.
You can visit Avod's blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there. Let us know what you thought about Morgan and how problematic it was. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And I encourage you to do all of those things. So, yeah, I guess until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.